one hand, one voice. The Arab voice is heard with Yahela voice. Now you are listening to Talk of the Town. Talk of the Town with Ray Hanania. Talk of the Town brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems.
And good afternoon. I'm Ray Hanania, and this is Talk of the Town Radio, the alternative voice to the biased anti-Arab mainstream American news media. I wonder if I just use the first letters of all those words, what it means. It probably comes out to be an Arabic word, haram. Let's see, it'd be Bamin. Is that a word, Khalid? No. Bamia, I know, is a word. I don't like Bamia, so that fits for me. You know, who cares? It is Friday, March 13, 2015. And we hope you'll join our discussion today by calling 708-321-1313, extension 1. We want to hear your opinions. That's 708-321-1313, extension 1. Our producer is Khalid Khilfa, and he'll help get you on the air during our discussion. Talk of the Town is brought to you by LifeRun Medical Alert Systems, the best emergency system for seniors and people in healthcare need, available today at 1-800-421-3366. We're broadcast every Friday at 4 p.m. Chicago time and on 1450 a.m. radio and online at YahelaVoice.com. And we're rebroadcast online on Mondays at 11 a.m. You can download our podcast from iTunes or from our news website at thearabdailynews.com, which this month will probably get 1.5 million page reads. So we want to thank everybody for visiting thearabdailynews.com. And don't forget, of course, to download our app for the Arab Daily News for Apple and Android devices. This week we're going to be talking about the conviction and sentencing, a true injustice, of Rasmiya Oda. Oda was convicted Thursday of quote-unquote lying on her immigration form. The jury threw out, though, and this is kind of a victory. This is kind of a dual disappointment, but a victory at the same time. They threw out the phony, trumped-up charges that Rasmiya was a terrorist, worse than the Rwanda and Guatemala terrorists. It's amazing what the Joint Terrorist Task Force will say about Arabs. If she was not Arab, we would not be dealing with this topic. Nobody would. But she was sentenced to only 18 months in prison after the FBI and Justice Department had originally sought 10 years, which was 120 months, and then cut it down to 5 to 7 years. And that was far short. She got far short of that, which is a small victory, but still not enough. Our guest right now is Rasmiya Oda's attorney, a phenomenal attorney who has stood up for civil rights in many different cases, including in the Arab American community, Michael Deutsch. And Michael, again, listen, congratulations. I know it's tough to do, but you were able to break this down to the one conviction over lying on a piece of paper, as opposed to what the Justice Department wanted, which was to make Rasmiya Oda out into some type of monster who was vicious and who deserved far more time.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Ray.
That's all right. It's great to have you on the radio show, Mike. Tell us, you know, if you don't mind, why do you think she was convicted? I mean, is it that it's tough to beat the bias and the perception that's out there? You did kind of beat them, though, but I unfortunately just fell short of a complete vindication.
Well, she had a difficult situation. She had lived in this country for 20 years, and when she applied for her citizenship after having a green card for 10 years, she was asked a question of whether she had ever been convicted of a crime or had ever been in prison or had ever been charged with a crime. And she had been put in prison for 10 years by the Israeli government after a conviction by Israeli occupation military tribunal. But number one, she didn't consider that a real conviction because it wasn't a real trial. The judges are soldiers, military soldiers who had invaded her country. She didn't get a lawyer until the eve of trial, and she was horrifically tortured to get a confession out of her that was the basis of the conviction in the case. In addition, we wanted to show the jury that as a result of the torture, she suffered from severe chronic post-traumatic stress. And as a result of that, she would have blocked out the recollection of what happened to her in that trauma that she experienced 45 years earlier in 1969. The judge wouldn't let us put on the post-traumatic stress defense. He wouldn't let us call an expert who had testified not before the jury that she did suffer severe post-traumatic stress, and that affected her ability to recall what happened to her in Israel. He also wouldn't let her testify about how she was tortured, about how she was innocent of that crime, and how she didn't get a fair hearing or trial. So all the justifications and reasons why the jury would reach a verdict that would be not guilty was taken away from her, and all the jury heard was that she filed this application and said no convictions, and she was convicted, and they put in these 45-year-old Israeli military court documents to show she was convicted, but wouldn't let us challenge that in any way. Well, it was kind of a fait accompli, if you will.
Well, what was fascinating to me is how easy it is for people to forget. We're in the post-2001 hysteria of anything Arab or Muslim is bad. We're in a society where they look at Arabs and Muslims and they hate us. Not because they know anything about us, but because they dislike us based on what they've heard about us. But what happened with Rasmiya Oda took place in 1969, 2 years after the Israelis invaded the Palestinian territories. They claim, oh, we were going to do it because the Arabs were going to attack us. But the truth was, they launched the first attack. They went into the West Bank. They went into Gaza. They went into East Jerusalem. They brutalized the population. 2 years after that, resisting this military occupation, if there's violence, whether she was involved in the violence or not, should have been expected in a conflict like that. The Israelis were killing...
Absolutely right. People are going to resist occupation. They've done it throughout history. And in fact, the United Nations Security Council, including the United States, unanimously called for the Israelis to leave the occupied territories in 1968. They passed a resolution. And of course, we all know they're still there, and 300,000 settlers have joined them there. And they're trying to take over more and more Palestinian land every day.
So when the judge denied you and Rasmiya the right to present the political argument, which basically would have put this act in context, because honestly, I think though that you beat it. And I think though that they tied your hands, because you reminded me that you represented another individual that was vilified in the media right here from Bridgeview, Muhammad Salah, a friend of mine. I know Rasmiya Oda. She's a great person, always so kind, so nice, not a mean bone in her body. Same thing with Muhammad Salah, a family man with children. You represented him in his case a number of years ago. You were able to make that political argument, and as a result of that, you were able to put in context, you know, the fact that all these charges of that he was a terrorist from the Israelis, you know, they come with enough, you have to have a grain of salt, you have to look at the political motivation that the Israelis have. Every Palestinian to them is a terrorist. There isn't a good Palestinian, and I thought that that was able to really knock the bat, you know, to hit the homer in his case, even though he served 20 months, they really wanted to put him away for a long time also.
Yeah, he was facing a life sentence, and the reason we were able to do that was a long trial, and the judge did not block us from putting on the history of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and why somebody from the U.S. would go there to help people living under occupation in the throes of the first Intifada,
right,
and was accused of bringing money to help people who are living under occupation. With the jury, you wanted the jury to understand that and be sympathized with that. So once you explain to open-minded people that history, you're going to be able to win them over. You see, the American people have been given a false narrative about the Palestinians and the Israelis, and the Israelis are painted as victims and the Palestinians are painted as terrorists. And that's really the opposite of what has happened. They have been their land has been taken by the Palestinians. They've been killed. They've been tortured. They've been imprisoned. And their human rights have been denied. And this is from 1948 till to the present day. And this true history is never told to the American people.
Now, you're an attorney with the People's Law Office, which is based here in Chicago. Rasmia actually is from Chicago. She was a deputy assistant director at the Arab American Action Network. You actually pointed out something that I had missed when we spoke, which I thought was pretty significant. A number of years ago, I think about 4 years ago, the Terrorism Task Force and the FBI and the Justice Department made a big deal about raiding the homes of 23 activists, including a number of Palestinians, including a friend, Hatem Abudaya, who is the executive director of the Arab American Action Network. They raided his home.
They actually subpoenaed him to a grand jury to give information about his work and about his associations.
So he wasn't.
Three other people. They never indicted. No, they raided these homes. They subpoenaed all these people to a grand jury. And to this day, which is now 4 years later, they haven't charged anybody with any criminal activity. But as a result of this, and their focus on the Arab Action Network, they found Rasmia, and they learned that she was a naturalized citizen, and then the government contacted the Israeli government and asked them to provide them with all the records that they had about Rasmia. And that was what resulted in her being charged in Detroit with immigration fraud.
So in other words, they basically went on a fishing expedition, you know, with the rights trampled of American citizens, hoping that they would find something, and they really didn't find anything with the other activists, and they just stumbled on one case, which involves Rasmia, and you know, she's done so well. She's been, even the judge, I think, you pointed out, you quoted extensively that he pointed out that, judge in, Gershwin Drain had pointed out that, she had, was a nice person. She had rehabilitated herself. She wasn't an extremist, you know, she was a good person.
He said her work, which has been extraordinary, working with immigrant women and helping them adjust to life in the United States was commendable, he said. He said he got letters from all over the country, from all walks of life, talking about Rasmia and the work that she's done and what an upstanding inspiration she was for the people of this country. She's given more to this country than many people who are born here and get that citizenship automatically. She's contributed to making this a better country, yet the government goes after her because 45 years ago, they said she was part of some resistance movement that they call terrorists.
Now, over the years, you've represented some very big cases. The Attica prisoners, I was reading your bio, following the 1971 uprising and state massacre of the prisoners there. You worked on the defense of the prisoners charged with criminal offenses, and you actually won a $12 million settlement for the prisoner. And this is really unique, a prisoner's class action civil rights suit against the New York State officials. You also represented Puerto Rican independence activists over the past 40 years, and you were the lead counsel in obtaining clemency in 1979. From Jimmy Carter of the Puerto Rican nationalist prisoners. There have been a lot of them. How, and lately though you've had, it's now the Palestinians and the Arabs are the, and Muslims are the main focus, you know, of this, you know, crackdown by the government. I wonder, maybe you, of all the different people out there, I think you're better, equipped and experienced to tell us how does the fate and the challenges that Palestinians have faced in the judicial system, are they worse, better, or the same of a number of the activists that you've represented, you know, in the past? How do
well,
we
I think they have a, mm-hmm. yeah I think they have a very difficult situation because the people who are going to serve on juries, if they're charged with criminal offenses, are ignorant and been made ignorant of what's going on in the Middle East. And they look at a Palestinian and they don't see them as someone that has suffered, has been dispossessed, who has had one of the highest intellectual levels of all people, and who are just trying to fight for justice in their land, in their country. And they just see them as terrorists. And this thing about terrorism, particularly after 2011, 2001, but even before, the U.S. government has greatly expanded its power under the guise of fighting terrorism. And some of the basic rights that people are guaranteed are no longer guaranteed. You have anonymous juries. You have sentencing that increases because of terrorism. You have you have the ability to charge conspiracies in which people don't even have to have met or been involved with each other. And, of course, we also know that they entrap these young Muslim men who have no ability to do anything other than what the FBI supplies, the money and the weapons, and then they arrest them and say, oh, we foiled another terrorist attempt. Probably there's 200 cases like that since 2001 that the FBI has to set up young Muslim men. So, yeah, it's very difficult, and of course anyone that's accused of being a terrorist, whether they're fighting for Puerto Rican independence or Palestinian, you know, justice and homeland, are going to be immediately prejudiced against because this word terrorism is, you know, inflicted fear and ignorance on behalf of the people of this country.
Michael, we have to take a quick break. Are you able to stay on a little bit longer with us to talk
sure,
a little bit?
Sure.
Okay, great. That's fine. We have Michael Deutsch. He's the attorney who represented Rasmiya Oda. And I think it was a somewhat of a victory because the government really wanted to put her away for 10 years, then they cut it back down to 5 to 7 years. You know, when you multiply that by 12 months, 5 years is 60 months. Rasmiya still, unfortunately, was sentenced to 18 months, which is a year and a half, which kind of tells you how insignificant this case really is. It was about paperwork and that she allegedly lied, and there's even an explanation that she has that we'll talk about with Mr. Deutsch, who is with the People's Law Offices here in Chicago. He's represented a lot of people from Mohammed Salah to a number of other activists, all the way, you know, Puerto Rican activists. He's a civil rights lawyer, and I think he's, and the Attica activists, I think he's done a great job. Michael, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with attorney Michael Deutsch from the People's Law Office. Their website is peopleslawoffice.com. I'm Ray Hanania. We'll be right back right after these messages.
You're listening to Ya Hala Voice.
Home Life Furniture. آخر صيحات الأثاث وكل ما تحتاج من مفروشات. Home Life Furniture. الأمانة، الأخوة، والدقة في المواعيد.
No credit needed to finance. Everyone is approved at Home Life Furniture. 13449 South Cicero Avenue in Crestwood, Illinois. 708-631-3627. Mention Yahela Voice and your delivery is free. Get $200 off when you spend $1,500.
Do you have a medical alert device? When you press the button for help, can you talk through your pendant? With many companies, you still have to talk through the base unit, and that's not much help in an emergency. The answer, LifeRun Medical Alert Systems. Simply press the button and talk to a live operator right through the pendant. If your device can't do that, upgrade to LifeRun today. The system is free, the shipping is free, and the monitoring fee is less than a dollar a day. Call LifeRun now at 1-800-421-3366 or order online at LifeRun.com.
and Carry Chrysler Jeep Dodge's 72-hour sale starts now. $30 million in inventory, $5 million in discounts, and $25 million to lend will be available for this public sale at Man Carry's Chrysler Jeep Dodge at Oak Lawn. Now through Monday, get $12,000 off MSRP. Get 0% for 72 months, plus a $4,500 rebate. 800 factory cars are on display. Brand new Jeep Cherokees, Grand Cherokees, minivans, Ram trucks, and more. $5 million in discounts will be made available on Man Carry's $30 million of new car inventory. Stop what you're doing right now and get to Man Carry's at Oak Lawn. $12,000 off MSRP. 0% for 72 months, plus $4,500 in rebates. $30 million in inventory. And bank reps on site with $25 million to lend. You will drive today. Hurry, this public sale will absolutely end Monday. Sale hours extended till midnight at Man Carry Chrysler Jeep Dodge on 95th Street, Oak Lawn.
On select models, $1,389 per thousand with zero down, with approved credit plus tax, title, license, and doc fee.
What's going on, everybody? I'm Rush, here to tell you about the best talk show on the planet. It's called Rise Up. If you're looking for a show that talks about all the issues that matter to you, then you need to listen to Rise Up. From the latest stories happening back home in Palestine, the Middle East, and, of course, all the stories happening in our own backyard in Chicago, and, of course, across the nation. That is what Rise Up is all about. Plus, Rise Up is a program that wants to hear from you. Call the show, 708-321-1313, extension 1. Oh, by the way, I also do a show with this guy named Bob. We call him the Great American. The guy thinks he's an expert when it comes to Arab-related news. Actually, he's not so bad. So listen to Rise Up every Wednesday, 4:30 to 6 p.m. Central Time on Chicago's 1450 AM and YahalaVoice.com.
Yahala Voice, connecting the Arab voice globally.
And welcome back to Talk of the Town Radio. I'm Ray Hanania. Our number is 708-321-1313, extension 1. We're on the line with attorney Michael Deutsch, a civil rights lawyer who's represented a lot of pretty tragic civil rights cases that are just unfair. And recently he just represented Rasmia Oda, who was one of a long line of Arab Americans that have been persecuted. It's almost like a political persecution because of who they are and who they've been disputing with, and of course that being Israel. We're speaking with Mr. Deutsch in terms of what were some of the issues that you faced, the hurdles. Rasmia was sentenced to 18 months, far short of what the Justice Department wanted, 5 to 7 years, which would have been 60 to, 84 months. 84. I went to the Chicago Public Schools, Mike, so I'm a little slow. And, I was gonna ask you, Mike, do you think the media was fair? Because I'll tell you, one of the things that I try to do is, fill in a gap about stories about American Arabs. And it just seemed that the only people really writing about this case were activists on both sides, that there were a few media that covered it. They covered the major moments, but they really never got into the real essence of, you know, the issue. Do you think that the media was fair, unfair, incomplete? How did you view the media coverage?
Well, I think they're superficial in many respects. They don't really get into the whole story. They don't go back and look at how the military, Israeli military courts operated, how torture has been consistently used by the Israeli security forces. And it's true that the progressive media did cover it and did support it. And there were, of course, typically Zionist press and strong pro-Israel writing about it, which just called her a terrorist and refused to do anything but just say, oh, the poor people who were her victims, without talking about the poor thousands and thousands of Palestinians that have been subjected to Israeli repression and aggression all these years. So, yeah, they don't cover it. They don't get into the real story. They just say she lied on her immigration papers and therefore she should be convicted, and 45 years ago she was involved in these bombings. And that's basically the extent of it.
And that has to make it tough for someone like you who wants to, You know, I mean, you got to deal with the public. It's still, a court case still comes to the public, to a jury of quote-unquote peers. And this jury has a basis. They try, you know, you try to find an objective jury. But in today's world, you know, a jury is only as good as what they've learned and how well the media has been fair about a case. If they're so superficial, then you're right. There's no reason for anybody to question, you know, whether the charges were motivated by politics or whether, in fact, she intentionally tried to, you know, hide the fact that she was, had been convicted in Israel. So they don't get into that because the media doesn't give them enough substance. That has to be very challenging. And I wonder, is that similar in a lot of cases, or did you notice, like, the Attica case, the Puerto Rican cases, they seem to get more media?
Well, it's the media is superficial or takes one side, particularly the government side. And also the legal system is set up to try and preclude all the political reasons for cases. The judges are trained to keep out anything that goes beyond the strict confines of the law. And this judge in Rasmita's case basically said it wasn't a political case and that, you know, both sides tried to make it one, but it was simply a case of lying under oath. But that's simply not what it was. It was much deeper than that, much broader than that. But they want to keep it, particularly when it comes to the Israel-Palestine issue, they definitely don't want that coming out in court. And one great example is that the judge at first, well, two things. We were in front of a judge who we found out was very pro-Israel and used to have trips that he organized in Michigan for legislators and others to go to Israel, starting way back in the 50s. And he was a big supporter of Israel. And we moved to recuse him, saying he couldn't be fair in this case because of his, you know, pro-Israel positions. And he excoriated us and said we were being speculative and we had nothing to show for what we were saying, and he denied the motion. Then it turned out that his family had invested money in the supermarket in Israel that was the subject of the 1969 bombing.
Yikes!
That's
unbelievable.
We were going to find that out, so then he recused himself.
And you know what's phenomenal? That's the perfect topic of, as a journalist, I covered City Hall for 18 years, and I'll tell you what, a story like that would have turned into 5 front page stories about a judge. It would have been like shocking that a judge would have not openly admitted that, you know what, I really can't be fair. It's almost, and I can bet you any amount of money, and I know you're not going to bet with me, but had he been the judge, I think we would have been looking at a 7-year sentence for Rasmia.
Well, we don't know that, but yes, you're right. Ultimately, he did come forward, but it was later, right before trial, when he realized that this might come out. And he had kept it, you know, he claimed he didn't know before that. So that's one example. The other example is that we had, as I said before, we had an expert, one of the leading experts in the world around the effects of torture on post-traumatic stress disorder, that how it affects your mind and your thinking. And she had examined and evaluated Rasmia over several hours, of 18 hours, and we wanted to call her as an expert to explain why Rasmia blocked this history in Israel. And at first he said, okay, he would let her testify. And then the government made a big stink about it, and somehow the judge totally changed his mind and precluded our expert and precluded her defense of post-traumatic stress. Wouldn't let her testify about it, wouldn't let us call an expert, and totally changed his position after writing a whole opinion saying it was going to be allowed and he was going to let it in. And obviously someone put pressure on that judge to change his mind.
Yeah, and it just seems like if the media especially, you know, if they're not being fair and they don't pay attention to these little details like this, the system can almost do whatever they want to do. Was there anything that you think really saved, or not saved, but kept this from being worse? You know, was it, you know, I mean, obviously it could have been worse with a lot of different things, but there was one moment in the case where you felt...
I think the thing that really saved it was the support that she had from her community and from across the country. Letters, we submitted 72 letters. Every day when we were on trial, the courtroom was filled with people, a lot of Palestinian people, a lot of other people. They had opened an auxiliary courtroom so that the overflow people could come and hear the proceedings. So they told the judge that this is a special person, and you're not going to be able to just, you know, go do whatever the government wants. You know, you're going to have to, you know, deal with the, her support and the work she's done. I mean, she's done some tremendous path-breaking work around organizing immigrant women and helping them adjust to life in the United States. So that, I think, was a big plus that we had that prevented the government from getting that 5 to 7 years in the end.
I just want to congratulate you and thank you for what you've done, and I hope the listeners heard the message that, you know, it does make a difference to show support. It does make a difference to speak out. Sometimes it's not easy, you know, because they're worried that there'll be some type of backlash or whatever from the powers that be. But in this case, the letters, the presence, the public show of support has an impact, and I'm sure it balanced off some of the negative stuff from the highly financed, you know, pro-Israel lobby. You know, and to me, this isn't about being against Israel. It's about being for justice and fairness, that people should be allowed to present their full case, and that they should be, it should be weighed on a fair balance. And it just seems to me that it's so hard when you're Arab or Muslim, you know, to be treated fairly in this country, and that's very sad. So, listen, any final thoughts?
Thanks for having me, Ray.
No problem.
Just thanks for having me, and keep up the strength, keep up the good work you do. You know, it's important to educate people and tell them what's going on. So, thank you for your work.
You're welcome. It was kind enough, it was kind of you to take the time to help us get the true facts out, because there were so many stories out there. I was tired of reading the anti-Arab versions, and it was just nauseating. So the fact that you were able to take some time to talk to me and others, I think makes a difference. Thanks, Michael. We appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
You're
take
welcome. Care. All right. That was Michael Deutsch, the attorney for Rasmia Oda, who spoke about the case that began, I believe, in November, I think November 10th, and just ended on the 12th of this month. So it's almost a month-long trial. Several month long trial, has been going on now, I think about a year or so. It's just horrible, what she had to go through. She was at the, festival that we had. What was that, Khaled? The festival we had over at Toyota Park. The Watani Fest. She was there. I got a chance to talk to her. Have you ever met Rasmia? She's a nice lady, great person. And, you know, if he, Michael Deutsch, had told me in an interview that I did for TheArabDailyNews.com that's posted there if you want to read that story, that they're going to appeal the conviction where she was sentenced to 18 months. They're going to appeal the conviction and the sentence. But if she's forced to serve the 18 months, she's going to be deported to Jordan. And what's amazing to me, though, is that this is a woman who, even if, let's assume she was involved, let's just think she was involved, in this alleged terrorist attack in 1969. Let's just assume that for a second. Even if she was, she paid her time. She paid the price. She was in an Israeli prison for 10 years. She was released by the Israelis, and she came to the United States after that. And when she was filling out the forms, you know, I mean, she comes to, after being in an Israeli prison where you're tortured and brutalized, and you're abused, then you come to the United States, and someone at the immigration office says, hey, have you ever been convicted of a crime? You're thinking, have I ever been convicted of a crime in the United States? No. She'd been living here for a while. She filled out her forms to become a citizen once she qualified time-wise. And that was, you know, in her mind, that was an honest statement. But the victory, I guess, is they couldn't get her because of the alleged violence. They couldn't get her because of the terrorism. They didn't even get away with the bias, because the first judge in the case, as Michael Deutsch pointed out, was conflicted. He was an activist for Israel, basically. You know, you can't judge a case involving Israel and, you know, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict if you're a judge that's helped bring people to promote the state of Israel. It's just amazing that he got away with that for so long and only recused himself, as Michael Deutsch pointed out, after it became known that his family was involved financially with the market that had been bombed in 1969. And to ignore the fact, the context of the violence. You know, I'm not saying violence is good. I'm not defending any violence. You know, people lost their lives in that violent act that was attributed to Rasmia. But what? Are the Israelis the only ones that have lost lives? The Palestinians have lost 100 times more lives. And in 1969, that same week that this violence took place, there were about 100 Palestinians who had been killed, and no Israelis. Some of them American citizens serving in the Israeli military. No Israelis have been charged for those murders. In other words, if you're an Israeli and you commit an act of terrorism, there's no accountability. You don't have to answer to anybody. But if you happen to be a woman who's imprisoned in a Israeli gulag, and then you're tortured by the masters of torture, the Israelis, because, you know, after September 11th, let's be honest, what did they tell the prisoners, the Taliban and the Muslims that they arrested in Afghanistan and Iraq? They said, if you don't watch it, we're going to send you to Israel where you're going to be tortured. They used the fact that Israel has a sinister, vicious system of torture, and they don't care about your life because you're a Christian or a Muslim Arab. They don't care. So they use that. And in all that context, none of that was important. The media failed. They didn't do their job. And honestly, I'm not sure we did enough for her. Because, you know, some people say, well, Rasmia Oda, Mohammed Salah, you know, we may have met them or seen them someplace, but it's not about me. It is about you. Because as a Palestinian or an Arab or a Muslim in this country, you can be targeted too. If these two can be targeted, like Rasmia Oda and Mohammed Salah, and persecuted, and then all these giant trumped up charges are, when it finally comes down to a verdict, are thrown out. All the accusations of terrorism, all the accusations of violence, they were thrown out of the case. It came down to the case of Mohammed Salah, that he had said that he wasn't a member of Hamas in an interrogatory, which is basically an on-the-record sworn testimony, you know, where you're trying to get the facts, that was conducted by the pro-Israeli, you know, fanatic extremists. So he said he wasn't a member of Hamas because in his mind he was raising money for the Palestinian people, and all Palestinians are Hamas in his mind, but it was far different from what they alleged, that Mohammed Salah was the commander, the world commander. That's the phrase they used, that he was the world commander for a terrorist organization based in the Gaza Strip. It wasn't about, hey, you said you weren't involved in a piece of paper that you signed in an early pre-trial interview, you know, in a confrontational, you know, deposition, you know, interrogatory with the pro-Israeli high-financed vicious extremists. No, they said this man was a world commander in a terrorist network that was killing Americans. So they make him look so bad, and still, all that stuff was thrown out. The FBI lost that case. The Justice Department lost that case. The Joint Terrorism Task Force, which rounded up and broke into the homes of some 23 activists, including Hatem Abudaya, in Chicago. They broke into these homes. They were doing a fishing expedition on the accusation that these were all people involved and engaged in terrorists, and there have been no charges against any of them. What does that tell you? That tells you that they're being persecuted. This isn't about protecting Americans. It's about harassing Americans. And that's an important distinction. And if we don't learn that, and if we can't convey that to the American people, then we lose, you know, our ability to defend ourselves. I'm going to tell you something. That's one reason why I got into journalism, because I always felt that there was a monumental challenge that had to be undertaken to take our case and not just talk to you as an Arab, but to talk to Americans, to get them to understand the truth of what it is. And yes, there is some extremism in the Arab community, but there's even more extremism in the American Jewish community and in the Israeli community. It's not about being Jewish. It's not about being Christian or Muslim. It's about fanaticism, and they are more fanatic than we are. And trying to get Americans to break through that headlock that the Israelis have Americans in. You know, they have the Congress in a headlock. They treated Netanyahu like he was the president of the United States. And even to the point where a week after Netanyahu made his presentation speech like he was some kind of king of America to this unofficial joint session of Congress, the Republican, 47 members of the Republican Party signed a letter that they sent to Iran, the country that they denounce as a terrorist group. These 47 Republicans felt it was important enough to send a letter to a country that they've denounced as a terrorist country. They still sent them a letter. Maybe they should be prosecuted for communicating with a terrorist entity. They sent a letter saying, hey, you're going to make a deal with the President of the United States, but as soon as he's out of office, it's going to be worthless and it'll be meaningless. They're trying to undermine American foreign policy. They're putting Americans in jeopardy. They're putting this country in jeopardy. And what are we doing about it? That's why I got into journalism, because I knew the real challenge was with the poor, uneducated, uninformed, average American person out there who just doesn't know what's happening. And they just sit there, they want to watch football, they want to eat popcorn, they want to go to the movies, and they just believe whatever they're told in the news media, which is so biased. I won't let my dog go poop on a newspaper. I won't use paper. He has to go in the backyard. I don't want my dog to be influenced by that bias in the news. Do you read the newspapers? Bad, Khalid. You cannot read the papers. I tell you what, the news media hates when I call them biased. I've gotten so much pushback from journalists who are on my Facebook page. They go, Ray, you were a member of the media. Yes, I infiltrated. And it was only after they realized that I was an Arab that I took a beating. You know, it was terrible. Anyway, I want to tell you how much I enjoyed getting the truth about the Rasmia case from Rasmia Oda case from her attorney, Michael Deutsch. And I just wish that, you know, more attention was paid to her case by the mainstream media. That it's, unfortunately, and the activists, I'm not knocking them, you know, some of them I don't agree with. I think they just go off the deep end, especially when they attack me and say nasty things about me. I really don't care, because I've been doing this for, you know, 6 decades. So I have a thick skin, and I love confrontation. My first radio show was called Confrontation on WLUP AM and FM radio and WBBM. It was called Confrontation, and but today, when I look back at it, I realize how vicious the news media was, that they're honest to a degree, that they want to get the facts right, but at the same time, when it comes to certain issues like the Middle East, they're willing to lie. They're willing to violate their own journalistic principles. They're willing to put their personal and crony interests above the interests of truth. And that's a fact. And that's a shame. That's the one flaw in American and mainstream journalism that exists and that I hope to change. Now, I've written a couple articles that you can read if you want to follow the Rasmia Oda case. You can go to thearabdailynews.com and read the story there. By the way, there was also an interview that I did with Mohammed Najib, who is a journalist from Ramallah. I think I'm going to bring him on next Friday, and we are going to talk about the aftermath of the Israeli elections, because the elections are on the 17th, on Tuesday, and Mohammed Najib will help us analyze the election results. There are 1.8 million Arabs in Israel who are Arab citizens, even though they're victimized and discriminated by Israeli society, a very racist society. They're fighting for equality, and for the first time, they've come together under a joint list, one party. All the Arab candidates, five of them are in the Knesset, and I think they have something like 12 to 18 people on their list. They think they can get maybe 12 Arabs elected to the Knesset and become the third largest party in the Knesset, and that might change things. Herzog, who is with Livni leading the liberal left Israeli movement, he has said that if he becomes the prime minister, he is going to go to the West Bank and address the Palestinian legislature. That would be the first time that any Israeli leader has done that, outside of Yitzhak Rabin, who sat down with the late President Yasser Arafat in 1993. And of course, Rabin paid the price when he was murdered by a fanatic terrorist extremist Israeli who killed him. I want to thank you for joining us. I know we only got a couple minutes left. I didn't leave much time for phone calls because I wanted to get all this stuff down. But you could read about Zubby's case, Haneen Zubby's case, on the ArabDailyNews.com. You can read about the coming together of the Arab parties. 1.8 million Arabs. If 80% of the Arabs who are qualified to vote vote, that would be a huge, could almost be a million votes. They could change Israel from the inside. And Israel has, the right-wing extremists have done everything they can to prevent that by making it harder and harder for Arabs to vote, just the way they did in Selma, Alabama in the 1950s and 60s, when they did everything possible to prevent black people from getting to the polls and casting their vote. The only difference I have with Haneen Zubby is I think that instead of criticizing the left, which has supported many anti-Palestinian programs, we need to work with them the way King worked with a government that supported segregation. If he had said, I'm not working with them because they support segregation, we might never have had the Voting Rights Act passed in the 1960s under President Lyndon Baines Johnson. All right, it's 2 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm Ray Hanania. Khaled, thank you so much for running the board. Thank everybody out there for listening. Remember, you can go to thearabdailynews.com to download the podcast of the show, usually Monday or Tuesday, and it's rebroadcast Monday at 11 o'clock here at yahalavoice.com. This has been Talk of the Town Radio. We will talk to you next Friday continue with the discussion analyzing the aftermath of the Israeli elections. Have a great week and weekend. Bye-bye.
Raise your voice with Yahala Voice.